According to new data from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the United States birth rate is at a 35-year low. Last year, there were 3.7 million children born in the U.S. The rate is down a percentage point from 2018. The drop was seen in all age groups except for women in their early 40s. They saw a slight increase in birth rate. Our next guest joins us for a look at the reasons behind the decline. Jennifer Glass is a Centennial Commission Professor of Liberal Arts in the Department of Sociology and Research Associate in the Population Research Center at the University of Texas, Austin. Jennifer, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be with you today.
What is your initial read on this statistic?
This is not at all surprising news. As the report says, we're just at the culmination of a 35-year trend, and as far as we know, it could continue to go down. The United States is singular in its refusal to enact policies that could, in fact, improve our birth rate, unlike our European counterparts, who have taken fairly aggressive measures to try and improve their birth rates.
Right. You've done studies on what you call the, I think it's the parental happiness gap, comparing the U.S. To other countries. What sorts of things are you looking at, and how might that inform people's decision on whether or not to have kids?
Well, it's interesting because when you ask parents, of course, they will tell you that their children are wonderful, it was the best decision they ever made, and they love them completely. I'm a parent. I feel exactly the same way. But when we ask more objective questions about the level of happiness and satisfaction that people feel with their lives, just generically, what we find is that in the United States, people who are parents of minor children, but even people who are parents of grown children, report lower levels of well-being, specifically happiness, than people who are quite similar in age and education and income who never had children at all. So we call that the happiness gap. And we looked at it cross-nationally across the European Union, around 22 countries. And we were surprised to find that the gap is largest by far in the United States. And it's smallest by far in the Nordic countries and in France. And in fact, there are a few countries where it's actually flipped. And parents of minor children are happier than people who decided not to have children. So we wanted to explore the reasons behind that. And we focused on several work-family policies that would make it much easier for families to continue to work and earn income while their children are growing up. And that seemed to be the key. When you enable the labor force participation of mothers and fathers with things like relatively long paid parental leaves, generally in the area of 4 to 6 months for each parent, and specifically when we looked at the cost of childcare for the average toddler, so we're talking 2 to 3 year olds, and countries that heavily subsidize that cost and put it as part of their public educational system had higher birth rates than countries that did not do those things. And the final policy that made a difference was just ordinary paid sick and vacation leave. The more a country offered as a statutory benefit for all workers, the smaller the happiness gap between parents and non-parents. Because these things give parents time and they give parents money to have families. And that's what parents in the United States sorely need at present and have a difficult time getting.
Going back to the declining birth rate itself, is there a value judgment here from your perspective? Is it a bad thing that the birth rate is going down, or is there good and bad mixed in there?
It's pretty much a bad thing, and I'll tell you why. It's a bad thing because we're an aging society, and what we need are productive workers between the ages of 18 to 65 to help support an increasing population that's older than 65. And we've traditionally done this with Social Security, but we've also done it with annuities and pension funds on the stock market and things like that. All of those are at risk if we don't have a vibrant, active, working-age population. We used to augment our low birth rates with a very welcoming immigration program. And for a variety of highly political reasons, we've stopped doing that. And what you see, of course, is an even faster decline in the birth rate when you do that. So we have been depending not only on immigrants, but the higher birth rates of immigrants to this country for several decades now. And that process is running its course. And so we expect to see, even among recent Hispanic and Asian populations that in the first generation at least had relatively high birth rates, we see all of those cohorts aging out and their descendants having small family sizes just like every other American.
Talking to Jennifer Glass, professor of sociology at the University of Texas at Austin, looking at a new CDC report showing long-term decline in birth rates here in the United States. Last year, the most recent data, the lowest in about 35 years. One piece of news that people might see as good news, the teenage birth rate. What are we seeing there?
That's been on a long-term decline for almost 30 years now, and that's universally a good thing. We like having births postponed until young women are capable of supporting themselves and their children and are healthy enough and have completed their education. So those are the crucial benchmarks for healthy pregnancies and healthy kids, and so that's a very good thing. Now, what we want is to see that fertility postponed into the 20s and 30s. But increasingly what we see is that it's very difficult for young people to imagine themselves forming households and raising children. They don't feel financially secure, and they don't feel like they can afford to have a home of their own. And for many people, being able to partner and live together and raise your children together is sort of the quintessential bottom line before they're willing to have children.
Now, we've seen periods of economic uncertainty through, I guess, all of human history, but we're still here. Did we do things differently as societies that allowed us to have stable, successful families, even with financial insecurity?
Well, you have to remember that until the past century, most people lived in agricultural communities, and children were a source of wealth. They were your labor force. So having kids was a good thing to do. And for most of history, when there was enough food to eat, that would enrich you. That would give you laborers, and that would enhance your wealth, and it would provide you with security in your old age. But we've kind of ruined that in the 21st century. So now there's no real economic advantage to having children, and they continue to cost you throughout their childhood and into their young adulthood now. So we've really changed what it means to have children. The benefits of having children really accrue to employers who have these nice, well-educated workers coming off the assembly line from all of our schools and colleges and universities, and for government tax-paying citizens who obey the law. So the benefits now accrue to everybody universally, even though parents engage in most of the expenditures to get them there. So that's really what's going on. When we saw the Great Depression, for example, birth rates plummeted because we were an industrializing nation. We were an urbanizing nation. Agriculture was in turmoil at the time. So it didn't make sense to have kids. Didn't make sense to have kids during World War II. So the baby boom was really a whiplash, not just to a decade and a half of low fertility, but also the booming of a post-war economy. Both things were taking place at the same time. Until we see that booming economy, I don't think we're going to see even a boomlet in fertility.
We're talking to Jennifer Glass, professor of liberal arts in the Department of Sociology and research associate in the Population Research Center at the University of Texas at Austin. She's with us to talk about the news that the U.S. birth rate is at a 35-year low, how we got here and what it means. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have big picture questions about the birth rate, or do you have a story to share from your own life about you or someone you know making that decision? Kids now, kids later, economic uncertainty getting in the way, policies that might or might not have helped you make that decision. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can tweet us at Central Time WPR. We'll pick up a conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation about a 35-year low in the United States birth rate, the factors that got us there, and what it could mean for the country in the future. Jennifer Glass is with us, professor of liberal arts in the Department of Sociology and research associate at the Population Research Center at the University of Texas at Austin. Got a PhD, by the way, from UW-Madison. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. What do you think about that news of the declining birth rate in the U.S.? And what is it that led to your decision whether to have kids, when to have kids, put it off till you're more financially secure? Does that time ever really come around? Call 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Mike is with us in Madison. Mike, hello.
Hello. Hi, Professor Glass, fellow UW grad. nice to hear you. I had a comment that basically our system of capitalism requires a positive growth rate in the population. It, basically, a corporation survives on either reducing its costs of goods or selling more of its product. And if you have
a reduction in your population, well, then each remaining person has to consume more, or it leads to offshoring your business to the lowest cost, generally labor market. And I think that's where the United States is at, where we've basically gotten to a point where we either need to maintain or increase our growth rate or continue to offshore jobs.
Mike, thanks a lot for the call. So Jennifer, the low fertility rate isn't sustainable in our capitalist economy, and maybe vice versa.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. That's an excellent point. Yeah, we've relied on growth, and when we couldn't get it here, we exported our products abroad to large consumer markets and kept pressing to open places like China, and India, of course, which have an enormous number of potential consumers. But the chickens have come home to roost because those countries are now starting to produce for their own nations. And so we have to figure out a way to have a sustainable economy without this constant drumbeat of growth. And I think that you can have a vibrant economy without the assumption of constant growth and exporting, especially in developed nations, because if our populations continue to grow, fortunately, we're not in danger of doing that. We're all losing population right now, but we're very energy intensive. In fact, the last statistic I saw said that one American child was worth about 337 Bangladeshi kids. So we need to really think about how we can keep our footprint on the earth small and environmentally sustained. But at the same time, we don't want to have an elderly and graying population without a productive and active labor force. And we also don't want what that tells us about us as a society, that we simply are not supporting young families, and we are not supporting children, and we are putting way too much of our energy and emphasis on the second half of life, how to maintain a private healthcare system that costs an enormous amount of money to keep people alive generally for the last 6 months of their lives. So that's kind of a different problem, but it's a problem of spending and allocation of resources and where we've exaggerated costs and where we need to rein them in and where we need to spend more and think about ways to help young families achieve their own fertility goals. Right now, we have a system where most people say they want to have, they want to have two children, but they end up not having two children because they feel like they can't afford it.
Thanks for the call, Mike. We'll go to Ben with us now in La Crosse. Ben, hello.
Hi. The use of the term improve for the birth rate, meaning increase, is a value judgment. Almost all of the ills that we face currently in terms of global warming, in terms of the current pandemic, in terms of food and water security, in terms of pollution, have to do with the fact that we're approaching 8 billion people on the planet, and that is far beyond the carrying capacity of the planet. So one of the few bright spots is the fact that birth rates are declining in different parts of the world, including developing nations. I applaud that. There is some short-term problems in terms of rearranging the society's expenditures in terms of the point about the elderly graying population. But since the society has been set up under capitalism to constantly increase, and since we're clearly reached the limits of our ability for the planet to sustain us, we can't keep going that way.
Ben, thanks for the call. So Ben, seeing a declining population growth as good news, Jennifer.
Oh, absolutely. And I completely agree that we've achieved outstanding successes throughout the developing world in getting populations to reduce their rate of growth. And many, many of those nations are now below replacement as well. Most people don't realize, for example, that Brazil is now at below replacement fertility. Mexico is headed for below replacement fertility by 2050. In fact, most demographers believe that global population will peak sometime in the next 30 to 50 years, hopefully at about 9.5 billion, and then will slowly start to decrease. I completely agree that that's too much, but the fact that we will see this slow decline, hopefully with the ingenuity of human invention so that we can lower our carbon footprint, we will be able to sustain a global population of perhaps 7 to 8 billion. This will require massive new technological advances in energy in particular. We simply cannot continue to rely on the burning of fossil fuels for the energy demands that we have on the planet. But there are many people who think that we can have sustainable food production, for example, for as many as 7 to 8 billion people.
Thanks for that call. Just 30 seconds or so, Jennifer, what are you going to be watching for as new numbers come in this year of the coronavirus?
Well, I'm going to be watching in particular those people who are entering cohabiting unions and are getting married, because those are usually the statuses in which people plan pregnancies. But with a 20% unemployment rate, with the continued insecurity in terms of what we may or may not see in the future in terms of economic growth and in terms of housing, I think that we can expect at best anemic birth rates going into the future. These are economic problems that have hit Americans of childbearing age in particular. So we're talking about people in their 20s and 30s, the millennials and the generation following them. They're on track to have record low numbers of children and record postponement of pregnancy. And I haven't even begun to talk about what that does. We're meant to have kids in our 20s and early 30s, not to postpone into our 40s.
Thanks to our guest. To jump in there, thanks to Jennifer Glass. She's a professor of sociology at the University of Texas Austin, looking at the declining birth rate in the United States.